To Yes Indeed Pod, a podcast about indie tabletop role-playing games where I interview creators about their aims and inspirations and about the theory, process and practice of game design. My name is Mark Shepherd, your host today and always, and your friendly local indie enthusiast. Today we're continuing our Yes in RPG Latam series with an interview from Diogo from Toca do Coruja, a Brazilian translation team working to make indie tabletop role-playing games accessible linguistically, financially and socio-politically to Brazilian Portuguese speakers. Diogo had so many interesting things to say about the intersection of art, politics and language, and I think this chat is incredibly enlightening. Just a warning that the audio isn't fantastic, but I've done my best and I think it's still worth a listen. Now that's out of my head and into yours, let's talk indie. Okay, so today we're talking to Diogo. Hi there, Diogo, and welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you, and thank you to your audience. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. You know, we've been in touch for the last 6 months, maybe a year, about various projects. So, you know, it's nice to be able to chat to you at last. Diogo, would you like to introduce yourself and let us know what you do in the indie tabletop role-playing game scene?
I started playing role-playing games in my younger age, 11 years. Old. I stopped playing. I think I stopped playing with 20 years. But the pandemic came on locked in my house with nothing to do. And a friend of mine invited me to play. And I was so out from role playing that I never know about Roll20 and Foundry. I never heard about it. And my friend told me about it. Whoa, the things do exist? Yes. Oh my God, this is like it's like 20th century. So I'm so late. How the role playing game scene was evolved.
Absolutely.
I start to study again. I start to read about new systems. The scene, and I was amazed at how the independent scene was great in this 2021, 2022. Parallelly, I started to study translation. And I met a group, a collective of translators, the Toca do Coruja, where I work today. In a casual conversation, we start to meet each other, and we go, "Oh, do you want to work with us?" "Oh, yes, I'm studying translation. I don't had the experience of translating a real book, and I find it a perfect opportunity to execute my expertise." So I love role play game. The Toca do Coruja is very Dungeons and Dragons centered.
Sorry,
but I don't like Dungeons and Dragons very much. I asked the Paulo, the director of Toca, I can choose what I could translate. He said, "Oh, you have the freedom to choose." And I start to use Twitter. And it was the first time that I used Twitter in 2021. I discovered some people working with independent roleplay games like you, Zed from Mictins. I don't know how to speak this in German. Another Brazilian guy, Diogo, who made a roleplay game about prehistoric things, a very nice one. This makes me very... I need to work with these guys. I need to bring this scene to Brazil, because Brazilians don't have too much. We still dependent what the great publisher bring to us.
Mm, yes. Yeah.
And of course, they choose to bring what makes money.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, because which is presumably, you know, mostly Dungeons and Dragons. And
yes, yes.
That's the problem everywhere, I think, yeah.
Vampire the Masquerade 2 has a great scene here in Brazil. I think the two greatest roleplay games in Brazil are Dungeons and Dragons. Second, Dungeons and Dragons. And thirdly, Vampire the Masquerade. I'm not reading this and reading about it, but I think what I see in the scene.
I think it's sort of a problem everywhere, but like it's particularly acute, I think, when you've got a language barrier as well, you know, when you're, because role-playing games are like so much about language and so much about speaking to people, talking to people, that if the problem becomes, oh, well, the game is inaccessible to us because it's in English, then that's quite a big problem. But I mean, kind of the secondary problem as well, which I know that Toka are trying to combat, which is that games are sold in US dollars often, and that's a very expensive currency for people in Latin America, and particularly Brazil, to buy. Yeah. Do you want to tell us a little bit about like how Toka tend to operate and like what it is that their mission is?
Just to finish my timeline. I come back, play and translate, and everything at the same time was insanity. I landed in Toka. I always worked as a volunteer in any project. And Toka have this policy of bring role play games to Brazil in our language, Portuguese, in a more accessible value. So because as you said, almost every great role play game is made in the USA or England or another English speaker country. Yeah. So dollar or euro is far expensive for us because euro is more valuable than real, the Brazilian money. We choose to translate for free. We have a work. Everyone on the talk have personal and professional life. And in your spare time, we choose to translate. Because of this operation, our work are a little bit slower than I like, but it's impossible because I have my family, I have a work, I'm a student. So the I don't know, the 3 and 4 hours that I have to sleep, I take 2 hours.
Instead, you're translating.
Yeah, to translate. I began the second book from Brinkwood.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's insanely good. I'm loving reading this scenario, this setting.
Brinkwood is great.
Absolutely. Eric is amazing. Right, yeah. Eric is an amazing writer. So I'm fond with Brinkwood. Toca do Coruja. We start this work contacting indie writers or indie publishers, and I was very lucky because almost everyone that I contact understand our project and supported us and trusted us. Because think about it. You are in your house doing nothing and your Twitter bleep and you look, oh, I am a Brazilian translator. I want to translate your work for free. I know how it sounds. It sounds like a scam. It sounds like a scam. But
No, not at all. Like, cards on the table, like, you approached the Far Horizons Corp and I was representing some of their interests at the time, and you said, well, we'd like to translate some of the work that you put out. And for me, like, what this sounds like is you're opening up a market for us. You know, these are people who we otherwise effectively don't have access to as people we can sell games to, you know, because A, to make it worthwhile for us, we have to sell our games at a price that basically prices Portuguese-speaking Brazilians out of the market, right? There's also a language barrier there. Like, I don't know exactly whether role-playing games are purchased in English in Brazil anyway. I mean, I just don't know. So then maybe we just can't access those people. You know, we can't sell games to them. So what you're doing is you're saying, we're taking stuff written by Far Horizons, we're translating that into our own languages, we're making that available for sale. You are allowing us to access a market of, you know, something like 100 million people that we previously didn't have access to.
Yes.
Selling to. Yeah, that's amazing. It's fantastic. It's really cool work. And, you know, I absolutely applaud it. I absolutely love what you're doing. So,
thank you.
Massive respect to the work of translators in everywhere, really.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. There are some people who look at this as a scam. And I respect it. No, yes, but because it's strange. It's very strange. You are at your house and looking at the phone and somebody offering something for free. Like we said, we like a Brazilian saying, nothing's for free. But it's not for free.
Oh, not totally.
Yeah, because we are building a name. Yeah, I have to pay to speak about me. Yeah, like in propaganda or something like that. And my name is being spread because I'm doing my work. I'm not paying for it. I'm paying with my work, but you get what I'm saying.
Like there's still work being done, you know, there's still value in that. And you're still not giving you the fruits of your work away for free, are you? You're selling that work on again at a price that's accessible to, you know, somebody working in Brazil. I think we kind of, like, I don't know, we don't need to go into the details of the contracts here, but you're making it, there's a price there that's in real terms for a Brazilian person, on average, like 1 or 2 days worth of work,
which
still seems like an awful lot, right? But it's much more accessible than, say, the current price of Brink would say. There might be a week's wages, 2 weeks' wages for somebody in Brazil. Obviously, it's impossible for the majority of people to purchase that. Again, just enormous respect for that part of the project.
Thank you. The average price of a book of role-play game in Brazil is almost
$25. I don't know how much that is. Yes, yes. It must be a lot.
Like a price of, here in Brazil, we have a basic chest. I'm free translated. It's a pack of foods and things like that. That is the basic for a family to live for a month. We have this unit. No, one book of role play game worth 5 times food to a family live for 1 month. It's insane. It's
absolutely wild. Yeah.
Yeah. It's too elitist. It's too much elitist.
N times out what I said.
Yeah, yes.
Absolutely bonkers. So what you're doing then, you know, absolutely enormous amount of respect for that, because I can't think another organization in the world that is making games this accessible to a particular market. I think it's an absolutely fabulous thing to be doing. So, yeah.
Yeah. What makes me happy doing this is giving, not voice because you write it, but the given voice to producers. Because, let's be honest, Wizard of the Coast don't need us. They don't need us.
They do not.
But a guy that I know from German, he need not help because it's too pretentious, but we need each other because he have a nice and insane work, and I want my friends to read it, but they don't speak English. I think 5 to 10% of Brazilians speak English is too low, too little number. I think the accessibility is the future.
Yeah, it absolutely is, and it's amazing that you can do that through this act of, you know, taking a manuscript from English, turning it into Portuguese, turning it not just into standard Portuguese but to Brazilian Portuguese.
It's different. It's almost like different as British English and North American English. It's similar, but there's a little words that different uses and different pronounces. Yeah. It's very similar.
But it's like I was talking to you before the show about how I went to South America to learn Spanish, and like actually while we were there, they were teaching us Castilian Spanish. And they were also saying, but this isn't actually how we speak it over here. It's exactly the same thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's really interesting, yeah. But it's amazing that you're sort of localizing it, that you're sort of making it super, super national. And that's, it's incredible.
The translation is a very interesting thing to do, because let's talk about Brinkwood. This is the last one I'm translating. The book is written an old-fashioned English to emulate the setting. I'm talking this is in a good perspective, but this is a nightmare to translate.
No doubt.
Because there are words that have multiple meanings in one single word, and I have to dance with the word to understand what Eric wants to tell me, to summarize it, and bring it to Portuguese. So is a work to understand what the writer wants to tell. It's not word to word. I can't pick a word in a context and translate. We call it one to one. You know, like an example. Sometimes stop is not parar. Parar is stop in Portuguese. Sometimes you can stop means you can't go, or stop means you're being stupid. These things is the magic of my craft. My craft.
Well, no, I think translation is art. Anyone who has worked with a translator before will, you know, tell you it's as much art as writing it in the first place. Like, I was thinking about this the other month because I was reading some translated poetry, and I was like, how do you translate poetry? Poetry is like purest expression of language, right?
Yes. So
basically rewriting the poem
in a different
language.
Totally.
And like, I think particularly, I mean, you know, I'm going to talk down about English. English is a terrible language. Like, it's so difficult for other people around the world to learn English because it's just so full of contradictions and, you know, made up words in all kinds of ways. But also, like, role-playing game has extremely specific style. I imagine like translating the style of a role-playing game book, regardless of the voice that it's written in, regardless of the tone or the theme or the topic, like that extremely precise use of language.
Yes.
It's be an absolute nightmare to translate.
Yes.
So, yeah. Again, enormous respect for translators.
No, but I love it. The more difficult, more I like the work. The easy ones, I like it. But the hard ones, the ones I like the most because I'm learning with it. I'm a fan of horror, so I read a lot. I read a lot of Lovecraft and Stephen King. So I never read the Lovecraft in English. I always read the translation to Portuguese.
And I picked That's interesting.
The completed work of Lovecraft was, I don't know, $1, almost for free. And I picked the entire work of Lovecraft, and I picked one story to read. I don't know, the story must have 3 to 5 pages, and I spent 3 days to finish.
I have exactly the same experience. not Lovecraft, but some South American author. I love reading in Spanish, but it takes me so long, an unbelievably long time, because it's just the density of language that some people use can just be wow.
Yeah. You know,
a lot. I've read Lovecraft, and actually it takes me longer to read than normal text because it's prose heavy, and to be honest, I don't think it's fantastic writing.
I think
the stories are okay. The writing is not great, and there are some other things about it which are definitely not great.
It's
just hard to read.
My interest in Lovecraft is the mythology that it creates, but as I said, this story itself is not that great and almost the same. You read one history, the most, it's the same, but he changed the skin. And then the skin of the character of the god, of the monster, is very tiresome to read Lovecraft a lot.
Sort of interested to know whether or not when you're reading in a different language, because I think this is true, but I'm interested to know from a different perspective, whether or not you sort of take more notice of the story and you like understand what's happening better. Because I don't know, maybe this is just me and I'm quite lazy about reading, but like I just sort of skim over a lot of it. I just like gloss over what's being said. I don't really pay attention that much. But when you read it in, for example, when I read in Spanish, I just like have to know exactly what is happening, because otherwise I can't make sense of the sentence. I don't know what your experience is like.
When the writing is more or less in my English skill level, it's easier to understand. I don't have to think my level of English, reading English. I'm speaking not that great, but my reading skill is better. And I don't translate it. I think in English. If I look at a word, I understand it without translating, automatically translating. When I'm reading something beyond my level, like Lovecraft, because he used lots of adjectives and the ones that make no sense to me, this break my immersion in the text. So I have to look at the dictionary. Huh, what is saying? Oh, okay. And another word. Oh my God. The guy wants to tell. No. Oh, okay. Ah, okay. So this break my immersion, and I forget what I read in the first one. The phrase had four words. In the when I get the fourth one, I forget the first one. What was I reading? So the difficult text, difficult the fluidity of the reading.
I'm really interested in that, and I've always been interested in like language and translation and interpreting and stuff like that. And it's particularly interesting to me that it's, you know, being applied here to an RPG space. The other month you contacted me about a game that you were, I think it was about Brinkwood actually. This is a much bigger topic than we have time for, but the kind of differences between how English can be written in terms of gender inclusivity, regards to gender neutral pronouns. And I know there's a movement in Spanish, for instance, where people are starting to try to use ella rather than, you know, ella or ello. I don't know whether that's also happening in Brazilian Portuguese as well. I mean, how do you approach that in translation?
Yes, this is a very spiky topic, because I don't know if you or the public, the audience know, but we have a very... Our president, he's a geek, and we are in the moment. These identity topics are not going on, not going, because he is a racist, he's a fascist, he's a proto-Nazi. Everything that the Brazilians minorities get conquest, they have to have a step backward. Now we are fighting to vaccinate, because people are believing that vaccine is a thing that puts a chip in you and you'll be controlled by Chinese satellites. It's insane. Brazil is in an insane moment right now. So these topics of inclusivity is stopping. There are some another translators and people who still believe in that, in the inclusivity, and that are doing what we can, because as Portuguese is almost every single word have a gender. In English is easier, because little word that have the female version and male version, prince and princess, parent and empress. But almost every other words don't have gender. But in Portuguese and Spanish and French too, every words have the specific usage to male person and female person. We don't have the neutral gender. We don't have like it in English that used to things, no? More or less things or animal. English speakers are using they. But the use of they is not new. I was reading about it to understand how to translate precisely. And almost the 60s, they are talking about they.
A lot of linguistic conversations around this, because the pushback generally is it's confusing because it's used both for the singular and the plural. Well, you know, this isn't that uncommon. And as you said, it's significantly easier in English for us to be able to sort of adopt a gender-neutral tone of speaking or a gender-neutral tone of being addressed. And all the languages you talked about, so French, I think, is particularly difficult. Spanish, I know there is a movement now.
Yes, yes.
And in Brazilian Portuguese, it must be quite difficult to push back against that.
Yes, yes.
You know, the moment that you're in, the political moment, but also centuries of linguistic development.
Yes, and unfortunately, the role players are not that inclusive. The majority of the gamers, the players, are male, cis, and have a little bit of prejudice to this inclusive agenda, you know?
Yeah.
So if you use what LGBTQ community are proposing, that the use of elo, because we have the a word to she, ela, and he, ele. But they, we have the female version, that elas, and they, male, is eles. They are proposing the use of elo, that is a fusion of everything. You should use elo to refer about everything, but they are not a consensus, because they are elo or ilo or ilo. So if you put it to the great public that is not into this topic, you cause more confusion.
You're gonna get some pushback.
Then include
it's really interesting.
We use a strategy that is make the text more inclusive. As I said, every word have gender. So almost every text in Portuguese is in masculine. It's a male gender. So the game master is he. The players, he. The characters, he. So we are mixing. So
it's really interesting, because I think in kind of the late 90s and early noughties, when English writers were making games, it's a kind of reaction to the general consensus of it's men who play games, it's men and boys who play games, so it's always he, him.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they started using he, her for the game master, and he, him for the players. It was a really interesting twist, and like what it did was, obviously some people were a bit annoyed about this, but because linguistically you can just say, well, I'm just separating these things, you know, I'm saying, when you read this, if there's a she, her referred to, you know that it's the game master. If there's a he, him referred to, you know that it's the player. Actually, that's a really useful shorthand. But also, it just makes your game text seem a lot more inclusive. And, like, is that the sort of level of thing that you're doing when you're translating now? Or
because in Portuguese, you can use character as a female word or male. So we pick the female. So, yes, because there is too much male words in the text. So we are doing a little neologism to the game master. Because there is a word in Portuguese that gerência is a female word, but when I put in a acronym is GM.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gerência de mesa, GM, a table management.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah. That's really interesting.
Yes. So
that's cool. I very much like that.
So in the text is AGM. Female, a personagem, the character, and o jogador,
the male player.
Yeah, you have to pick one to be male. So yeah, okay, the jogador, and the character on the text. So the non-player characters or the player characters, we respect the gender, and this is the only time that we use the neutral language, the Brazilian neutral language. I was translating Mictins, a roleplay game about Ramster-like beings, and the texts are too right and neutral language. It was the first time that I translated that text in a neutral language text. Zev, the actor, we have this conversation too, and we are chat about it, and they give me lots of ideas, because they said that they have the same problem to translate to German, because German have to just get the problem. I read a translation from a Brazilian translation from the translator use this mixed use of genders, female, male, and plural and singular. So this gives me an idea. So I get to Zev. Hey Zev, this is the idea. They like it. They approve.
Yeah.
When I start to translate Brinkwood, I read, it's neutral language too. So I talk to you and Eric, you two approve. Okay, let's do it.
Well, in that, you know, we've sort of talked about how I personally consider translation as art, and I think a lot of other people, you know, have that read as well. But, like, translation is also a political act in that respect, because you're taking it from one socio-political context, which is, you know, distilled and condensed into language, to another socio-political context, which you kind of have to then pickle and repickle as a... like horribly mince my words and language programming language paradigms there, but you know, to take it into something that people will appreciate and mesh with. And I like what you're doing there is incredibly smart, because you want to use this inclusive language, but you also know that it's going to alienate some of your audience. But doing it this way is super smart. I love it. Thank you for telling us all about that. Before we go, Diogo, would you like to tell us where we can find you and where we can find Tokodoga Karuja? Sorry for the butchered pronunciation online.
Yes, we are on the Twitter and Instagram. Diogo, I forget my username on the Twitter.
Diogo Arrakis.
Yes, Diogo Arrakis. Yes, Diogo Arrakis and the Twitter. I don't use it Instagram a lot, but I have it. Diogo Arrakis _ tradução. Yes, it's very hard. It's very hard to English speak. this song is almost impossible to English speaker. It's very nasal sound. But yeah, it's another talk. And Toca do Coruja, we are on Twitter too. Instagram too, yes, and we have a website, thetocadocoruja.com.br.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for taking us through that. And yeah, I'll put all those links in the show description, of course. And all I've got left to say is thank you very much for coming on Yes Indeed Pod.
It's a pleasure.
And good luck with finishing translating Brinkwood. You know, I'm so excited.
Yes. I think I will finish translating in 1 week.
Wonderful.
Yeah, okay. But we have the proofreading, the second proofreading, and the layout. Yeah, I think it's not that July, August.
Okay.
No, July, no. Right. July is too soon. Until December. Okay. So, yeah, it's easy. But until December is okay. But it's a great work, and I'm very happy that you guys trusted us. I was very afraid to contact.
This is just a shout out to everybody in the indie RPG scene. If Tokodoka Ruha get in touch with you, just say yes, because you won't regret it. And, you know, you're opening up yourself to selling a lot more games and getting your name out there. So you should just do it.
There you go.
You can be a lot less afraid now.
Thank you. Thank you very much for everything.
Thanks for listening. And thanks again to Diogo for the interview. As always, you can find all of the links in the episode description. Next time, we're talking to Dr. Maniac, aka Adrian Mejia, an Ecuadorian creator working on Koboa, Cultures and Creatures, a post-colonial South American TTRPG setting. Tune in 2 weeks-ish to find out more. This week's episode has been kindly sponsored by Beyond Cataclysm Games and the What is Roleplay podcast. Beyond Cataclysm is a friendly little micro-publisher and zine distro who aim to combine heart and excellence in all their projects. Check out beyondcataclysm.co.uk to check out the web store, featuring physical copies of many of the fine RPGs you've heard discussed here on Yes Indeed Pod, as well as hundreds of others. I'm told they also put in freebies into pretty much every order, so, you know, that's nice. Beyond Cataclysm also runs the What is Roleplay podcast, a beginner-friendly exploration of the world of indie tabletop role-playing games. Each episode features a topic such as dice, character creation, or death, with examples taken from across the scene and an actual play with a guest presenter, including, next episode, yours truly. You can listen on the Beyond Cataclysm site or on a podcast app of your choosing. Finally, check them out at Beyond Cataclysm on social media. They like conversations, photos of dogs, and seeing all the cool stuff that you do. This week, I'd like to thank some of my incredible Patreon supporters. Audrey Shankle, Patrick Buchner, Thomas Elliott, Carl Rigney, Dono McCarthy, Craig Duffy, and Dale Blackburn. Thank you all so much. We couldn't do what we do without you. And you, yes you, can get a regular shout out and joyful thanks too if you go to patreon.com/yesindeedpod and sign up today. You'll get access to our Discord server where we can hang out and chat and even join monthly editing streams and the Yes Indeed Pod book club. Most of the money will go directly to creators rather than to me, so you'll be investing directly in the indie scene and helping to make it a healthy and inclusive pace for years to come. And if you can't commit regularly, you can always help out by rating and reviewing the show wherever you find your podcasts, or by donating through the Ko-Fi page at ko-fi.com/yesindeedpod. Of course, you can always reach out to me through Twitter at yesindeedpod, that's YESINDIEDPOD. I'd love dearly to hear from you. Lastly, music credits. All music is taken from Be Quiet by Yatsar from the Free Music Archive, released under Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 International License. Thanks, Yatsar. Until next time, remember, does indie need you? Yes, indeed.